you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you by Amigo Bidets. Amigo is the greatest thing to use to clean your butt. We'll tell you more about that during the episode, but we've got a fan contest that I wanted to announce. The best fan-filmed commercial for Amigo wins $500 plus an Amigo bidet, and we will air the winning commercial at the end of the podcast. Deadline to enter is October 29th. Email gasdigitalmarketing@gmail.com for more info. All right, let's start the show.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, motherfuckers? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am the most consistent motherfucker you know. He is the fire, the king of the cocks, the victor in wars against Optimum, AIDS, and COVID. Robbie the Fire Bernstein. What's up, my brother? How are you?
Man, when you put it that way, I feel like I accomplished a lot this year.
Yeah. No, you're a real warrior when you really lay out your track record. You've taken on a lot of things that scare the average person, and you always come out victorious. Almost
king of the cocks.
King of the cocks, Robbie Bernstein. Several things that are on my mind that we could discuss on today's podcast. I wanted to maybe just briefly address Bill Burr hosting Saturday Night Live and the kind of storm that came out of it. It seems to me like there was like outrage about what he did, but it almost seems weaker than ever. Like, just no one's really taking it seriously anymore. And I don't know. It was interesting that that they had him on Saturday Night Live and what he did with his monologue. I mean, look, full disclosure, you know, as most of you know about me, I love stand-up comedy. Particularly love Bill Burr's stand-up comedy, and I hate woke culture. So I'm obviously, you already know where I'm coming from on this thing, but it was interesting to see. So he came by Legion of Skanks last Monday, and he ran the set for our crowd after we finished recording. So the live audience for Skanks got to see Bill Burr's, you know, work out his monologue. And I thought it was great. It was just, it was really fun to watch him work it out. And then of course, I also thought, you could see it coming. It was like, okay, this is going to be, there's going to be articles written. There's going to be angry tweets and shit like that, but whatever, who cares? This is fucking great. And pretty much went down exactly as I thought it would, which not like that's some great prediction. It was a fairly easy one to make. Speaking of predictions, I've gotten some wrong in my day, and I'm wrong very infrequently, but when I am, I'll acknowledge it. But so I thought, and I probably said so on the podcast a few times, but I really thought at the beginning of the whole COVID craziness that this might be the thing that really defeats woke culture, you know, cancel culture, SJW bullshit, because it was like, okay, well, now America's got real problems to worry about. We've got an infectious disease, and we've got the destruction of the economy. Things are going to get serious now, and no one's going to care about your microaggressions. No one's going to care about, you know, if a guy made you feel uncomfortable at work 30 years ago, or if, you know, you've offended some, you know, group with, you know, your jokes or something like that. And whoa, was I wrong. Man, was I wrong about that. Woke culture is far more ingrained in the culture than I guess I appreciated at the time. And I don't know. I don't exactly know what the dynamic is. I suppose it's that you have all of these people who don't know anything else except this. And so they're just going to double down on this. But it really is, it was kind of like fascinating to see that just in the midst of everything else that's going on, if you had explained in 2019 what was going to happen in this country in 2020, it would have been very hard to believe. And in the face of all of this, people are still upset that they didn't like Bill Burr's jokes on Saturday Night Live. It's truly bizarre to witness. Anyway, I don't know. Did you watch the monologue?
I mean, I never watch SNL, and I got excited because, like, dude, Burr's gonna be on there. Fuck yeah! But I gotta be honest, SNL's just were funny. They managed to make Bill Burr not funny. God bless SNL that they can take some of the funniest people you've ever met and somehow turn them out not funny. I don't know how they do that to people, but they managed to do it. No offense to Bill Burr, one of the greatest comedians of all time, but you put him on SNL, not that great.
Well, I thought his monologue was very funny. I just thought the crowd kind of stunk. I mean, it's not like people were writing like, oh, he bombed and shit like this, and he didn't. He did fine. It's just the crowd is so uncomfortable. And it really is something that I really noticed. You know, I started doing stand-up comedy in 2005 or 2006. And over that period of time, it really changed. There is this thing, particularly doing stand-up in liberal cities, not so much when you'd go to when you'd travel in the middle of the country or the South or something like that. That then it was still kind of the same. People come out to drink and laugh and all that. But when you do stand-up in left-wing cities, there is like this culture amongst people that you can feel as you're doing it, where people, if you get into any of these areas that you're not, you know, that you're supposed to just repeat the dogma in, crowds get uncomfortable about whether or not they're allowed to laugh. And Bill Burr went into the most sensitive environment. It's like we're a month out from a presidential election. Everybody's in the like COVID cult of you must wear your mask and follow the orders and all this shit. And, you know, all the other just normal woke, you know, subjects that people are uncomfortable about, you know, and he went right into that environment and went right at those topics. And so he, you know, and that's typical Bill Burr style, which is what makes him a comedic genius, is that he pushes his audience to being uncomfortable, even in a normal audience, even a crowd that goes to see Bill Burr because they're fans of Bill Burr. He pushes that crowd to be uncomfortable and then wins them back by just punching overhand right hilarity down your throat. Like it's just so funny that even if you were uncomfortable a minute ago, it's just like an involuntary response that you're going to crack up laughing because it's so good. And it was interesting. I found it really interesting to watch him, you know, attempt that in the harshest of environments.
God bless. He went for it.
Oh, yeah, he sure did. Yeah. Well, one of the things that was kind of funny about it to me is that Burr was like, Burr's not a right winger. And you can tell that by even by that monologue, like he leans left. No question about that. And the truth is that he was criticizing a lot of these things from a left wing perspective. You know, like it's not like he was saying, you know, wokeism is stupid. or all of this shit is dumb. He was saying this was supposed to be about people of color, not about white women. And he wasn't saying that, like, you know, gays should just shut up and stay in the closet. Like, you know what I'm saying? He was saying that, like, well, hey, they were never enslaved. Shouldn't we on the, you know, list of oppressed people put the ones who were enslaved ahead of those people? You know what I mean? So it was all coming from within a left-wing worldview, just criticizing the current manifestation of left-wing, you know, insanity. And I think in some ways that's almost what pissed people off more, is that it's easier if somebody's coming from a right-wing perspective criticizing them, that they can just label you every, you know, word in the book. But when you've got this guy who's undeniably amongst the best comedians in the world living, and then he's also married to a black chick, and he's coming at it from a left-wing perspective, making fun of you, I think that makes it a lot tougher, and I think it hits a nerve a lot more. So that was, I found all of that kind of fascinating to watch.
Yeah, maybe he had to preference it like, hey, everyone, just before I get into my comedy, I want you to know I got a black wife and I'm a left individual. And so despite my whiteness and Boston accent, I think I'm allowed to comment on these things. And like, you need a jury. You need like a jury of like, you know, woke
people. A skeptical woke judge goes, I'll allow it.
And then people know that he's allowed to make fun of it, you know?
Yeah, maybe. What a sad state of affairs, though. It's really something to watch. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which of course is Amigo. They're an amazing bidet brand, changing the way you go to the bathroom. It's unbelievable. I don't know if you're stuck in the old world of traditional toilet paper, but you got to get an Amigo bidet. Me and my wife love it. It's just a better feeling. You clean yourself more effectively. You treat yourself with a little bit of respect and dignity. Anyway, go check out Amigo. That's O-M-I-G-O. Amigo makes incredible modern bidets delivered right to your front door. With Amigo, you can turn any toilet into a bidet. It's really easy to install. You don't need a plumber. You can do it yourself. Think about it. You're going to the bathroom every day. Why not enjoy the experience? This will change your life. You'll never go back to toilet paper. You got to check them out. They have a bidet for every toilet, every butt, and every budget. Go to myamigo.com/POTP today, and you'll get 15% off your purchase. That's myamigo.com, myomigo.com/POTP. Get 15% off. Get a bidet today at myamigo.com/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. One of the things that's really interesting to me about comedy is, it's kind of rooted in this force, and it's very hard to describe, even for like a professional comedian. It's very hard to describe. Yeah, you ever remember that there was something on Seinfeld where George Costanza said at one point where he was like, what is laughing? He goes like, what is that? It's so weird. Like somebody says something and then you open your mouth and go, ha, like, what is that? It's very difficult to describe exactly what's going on there, but comedy is a force that you kind of get in touch with, and you bring out this response, like you like draw out an organic response from people of laughing. And it's very, to get at that, there's always an element of truth that has to be involved. Like that's why, you know, quite often when people are laughing at a stand-up comedy, you'll hear people say, that's so true, as they crack up laughing, because you touched on something that they're like, ah, yes. Like I've thought that, but never quite articulated it. Or, you know, like there's a relationship there. Not that comedy is exactly telling the truth, but that's always an element of it. There's usually like some truth and some absurdity involved, and kind of blending them together creates this thing. And so even when left-wingers are being really funny, it's usually when they're making fun of the woke bullshit. It reminded me of when Chris Rock hosted the Oscars a few years back, maybe like 3-4 years ago. Chris Rock hosted the Oscars, and it was like when the white Oscar thing was trending, and they were all making fun of how, you know, there weren't enough black actors, and Chris Rock just did this hilarious routine that pissed everybody off because he was just making fun of the whole thing. And he was, you know, he had some great jokes there, but he was like, one of them was when he was saying, he was like, you know, the Oscars was pretty white in the 50s and the 60s too, but black people didn't protest it because we had real shit to protest, you know, and like just, and it was like, it was just wonderful. And it's, and Chris Rock, of course, again, not a right winger, not coming from that perspective at all, but there's something about that that's really interesting. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I've never heard anyone be funny with woke shit. I just don't think it can be done. Now, I'm not saying someone who believes in some of this woke shit can't be funny, but they're being funny separate from that. I'm saying, like, with woke shit, be hilarious. Never seen it done. Something about being hilarious always involves telling uncomfortable truths, and you can't do that in the confines of woke. And so it's just, it's always interesting to me to kind of see how people play this stuff. And this is part of the reason why Saturday Night Live has fallen off so much over the years, because they don't want to break the woke rules. And then you just get into this box where it's like, it's not, being conformist is never hilarious. And that's what wokeism demands. And so it's just kind of, I don't know. I find something really fascinating about the subject, I guess, because like I'm, you know, the, probably my two, you know, professional passions in life have been comedy and politics. And this is the intersection of both of them. But it's like, you know, even Saturday Night Live, when it's just like, you know, their Trump thing or whatever, it's just never good, because you're like, well, it's just so obvious. You're just like preaching a dogmatic agenda. It's not funny. No one ever finds that funny. But anyway, so it was interesting to see Bill Burr go on there and fuck all the people who are offended by him. Like, I don't know. It's a great opportunity to tell people who are offended that, who cares, you know, who cares? Who cares if you were bothered by a joke? Deal with it. Deal with life. You got real problems. Nowadays, people actually have some real problems. All right. Speaking of real problems, the Jews. The Jews in Brooklyn and Queens have been going ape shit in New York City. That's also been pretty fun and interesting to watch. Of course, I'm glad to have you, Rob, our super Jewy part of the problem correspondent. You've always had your finger on the pulse of the ultra orthodox. So this has been something. So I guess there is so de Blasio is talking about shutting down certain zip codes in Brooklyn and Queens again, because of rising cases, and they're blaming the Orthodox Jews. Probably not completely unfairly. It does seem like they spread in those communities.
What's interesting, I don't know that this is 100% sure. I got a friend who lives down, my best friend, like lives down in that area where all these Jews are. And he was saying that they've actually been posting pictures within articles from funerals that have happened 2 or 3 years ago of mass gatherings. So like they're showing false pictures for one.
Wow.
And then when they start looking at the hospital reports of who's getting sick in these areas, it's not Jewish people.
Really?
Like, yeah. If you actually look at the growing number, like if you go into, now I'm not there, I haven't vetted this, so go to your own research. But if you actually go through the numbers of the rising cases in these specific zip codes, it's not Jewish last names. It's all like Hispanic last names. Hmm. Well, and then just
that's
the
interesting.
The big hypocrisy more than anything is, firstly, it happens to be that last week is it's the one fun Jewish week. It's the Sukkot holiday. And dude, they party. I mean, they party down in Brooklyn. They're out on the streets. It's like it's Jew party week. But
it's the Jewish Mardi Gras, really.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, there's no women, no one's taking off their shirts, but you can get hammered in the street and yell at women if they come out of their home. So it's kind of the opposite, but it's a good time. I've partaken. But it's what they were getting mad at de Blasio, and it's just twofold. One is he was at some of the, you know, protests. So why are you shutting down religious functions? You know, when you have no problem with protests. And secondly, I don't know how accurate or truthful they're being in terms of reporting the numbers or really pinning it. Now, I'm sure the Jews are guilty. They probably started the disease. They've probably got other diseases. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of bad shit that they're doing. But I think in this case, you know, this seems to be more government evil than, you know, Jews spreading diseases.
Well, there's no question that there is no justification for further lockdowns. I mean, there just isn't. Look, man, even the fucking World Health Organization just finally this week came out and said they recommend against lockdowns, which is, you know, kind of nice to see and also kind of infuriating because, you know, anybody who's been paying attention to this shit, you know, it's not like you have to be a genius, but if you just pay attention to this shit, if you hadn't figured out by like April or May that the lockdowns were retarded, you got to re-question everything. And now there's examples that really prove the point. Look, the truth is there was never at any point in all of this, feel however you feel about the numbers, right? Like they could say 200,000 people died. Now, the truth is that a large percentage of those people were people who probably would have died this year or next year due to other, you know, comorbidities or whatever. The numbers have never justified this type of government response. The only thing that you could debate justified this type of government response were projections of, you know, exponential growth. Anyway, sorry, I can't speak. But you know, like that. So back in March, if you were predicting, okay, this thing is going to go up and up and up and the hospitals are going to be overwhelmed, avoiding that prediction, maybe you could argue justified some type of response. I still, you know, I believe in freedom. I wouldn't go that way, but you could maybe make an argument with that. But those numbers never came. That the hospitals were never overwhelmed. None of this ever happened. And to now, at this point, with the numbers of dead and hospitalized, you can't even begin to justify this. So absolutely, the state is absolutely wrong about this. And it's just one of the things that's interesting to me is that you've seen a lot of protests around the country. There were some protests for the lockdowns, but a lot more for the Black Lives Matter type stuff. But this is a different group. You know, this is a group of ultra orthodox, conservative, religious Jews protesting, and they are furious at Cuomo and de Blasio. And I think it's good. I think it's a really positive thing. Now, there's something interesting about Orthodox and Hasidic Jews protesting the government.
Yeah, it's basically them and the Amish in terms of really showing you can live a very different, like, I mean, this is a community of people that couldn't be living more the opposite life of mainstream America. And it's like, how much America are we going to force upon these people? It comes up sometimes in these communities where they don't get secular education, and then are we going to force them to, you know, take the Regents exams and make sure that they're getting some math and science? Like, it's just interesting that you got these communities that are not us in any shape, way, or form, don't want to be like us, just happen to be here. And then what extent are we going to impose some slice of American life upon them?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And they're outside of what is really normal 2020 American life in so many different ways. I mean, like, you're not like, you know, say like we could sit here and talk about the effects of the internet and social media and things like that on the population. Well, guess what? They're insulated from that completely. They haven't fucking changed over any of that shit. Most of them don't fucking have I'm sure a tiny fraction of them are on social media. A huge percentage of them don't have televisions in their homes. I was literally just reading about that. Like, the Hasids are not playing in the same world. And one of the other things that really separates them from modern America, that in many ways makes them more similar to all of human history than to me and you, and you know, you're kind of like attached, you're holding hands of both sides, but you know what I mean, that makes them much different from most people who are listening to us right now. You know what, let me rephrase that, not most people who are listening to us right now, but what makes them much different from the general population is that these people, however you feel about them, they believe in something, and they really believe in something. They're not pretending to, they're not showing off, they're not virtue signaling. They believe to their core. All right, guys, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Quip. When's the last time you got rewarded for brushing your teeth? Well, with Quip's new smart electric toothbrush, good habits can earn you great perks, like free products, gift cards, and more. I love the Quip toothbrush and all of their products. I use it. My wife uses it. They promote good oral hygiene habits that you don't even think about with other toothbrushes. You track how well you brush. It's got a sensitive sonic vibration with 2-minute timers that pulse every 30 seconds for a guided clean. So basically, you clean every quadrant of your mouth with the correct amount of time. You do it right. Overbrushing can damage your gums. Underbrushing can leave plaque behind. This is stuff that you never think about with a normal toothbrush, but with the Quip, it lets you know, and then you're good. You're good to go. I'm always left with my mouth feeling cleaner and better, feel better about my breath, my teeth, everything. You got to check it out. And it's not just the toothbrush. Quip has everything you need to build a complete routine. They have mint or watermelon toothpaste with anti-cavity ingredients for strong, healthy teeth. They have floss that expands to clean and comes in a refillable dispenser to reduce waste. They're eco-friendly solar battery charge to power your Quip with sunshine. They're a fresh bag to bring your good oral care habits everywhere you go. Plus, you can get brush heads, toothpaste, and floss refills delivered from $5, and it ships for free. How smart is that? Join the over 5 million mouths who use Quip and save hundreds compared to other Bluetooth toothbrushes. Get Quip Smart Brush for just $45. Start getting rewards as well if you go to getquip.com/problem right now, and you'll also get your first refill for free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/problem. That's getquip.com/problem. Quip, better oral health made simple and rewarding. All right, let's get back into the show. It's a really interesting dynamic. You know, we've talked a lot about on this show before how much the state hates religion. And they really do. And the bigger the state, the more hostile toward religion they are. This is why the extreme example, of course, is communism and how they had to box out all types of organized religion. And you see it even today. It was the larger the state gets, and especially it's not a coincidence that the most hardcore statists that you know, the people who are going to advocate that, you know, government should provide everything, the people who identify as socialists, the people who think that, you know, housing, education, healthcare, all of these things should be provided by government. How many of them are devout Christians? What percentage? 1%? Maybe? They're all quote unquote atheists, right? And even if they say, even if it's like they say they're religious, it's kind of like the Kamala Harris, I'm a person of faith type shit. You know, like it's not really a devout religious person. And there's something to that. And of course the state becomes their religion, and, you know, wokeism becomes their religion, or these other things, because, you know, that's hardwired into us to worship. Almost everybody worships something. But these are people, these Hasids, these ultra-Orthodox Jews, these are people who very sincerely believe that they are God's chosen people and that they have a personal relationship with God. They don't believe in God as some type of abstract idea. They believe in a God and they know him. You know what I mean? Like that's, and so it just seems like there's a different factor there where then, like, you know, De Blasio or Cuomo comes in and says, this is the law. And they're like, yeah, who the fuck are you? My laws come from God, who I know personally. You know what I mean? Like if you, even for people who listen to this, who are atheists, just imagine for a second that there is a God. Like there is really a God who created the world in 7 days, and he is up there looking down on you, and you knew him personally. Like you communicate with him. You talk to him all the time. You don't have a question about whether he exists. You know he exists. You've met him and all that shit. And then some dude came along and was like, all right, let me tell you how things are going to be. Wouldn't you right away just be like, fuck you. I don't respect your authority at all. I know God. Well, that's the mentality here. And you can see right away why the big government types are so hostile toward religion. This is an example of it. And it's, you know, like I've been turned around over the last, you know, several years about my whole attitude on religion. I've talked about it a lot on the show. But this really was just a great example of solidifying exactly why I've come to feel that way. I mean, think about the fact that this year, the government has taken away more individual liberty than at any year in my lifetime. There's no comparison. And there's been some pretty bad ones, but this one blows them all out of the water, taking away almost every civil liberty that you could think of from the population. And who are the ones now who are standing up to this shit, giving them a big middle finger? It's the most devout people amongst us. And that's not a coincidence. Like, there's something really important to that dynamic, you know. And I know you know this because you grew up in an Orthodox community and you've been around these communities before. People who really believe in God like that, they have a whole different sense of authority than people who just worship the state.
I think that's fair. I saw that with the other people that I feel have the same passion for it are Muslims. Like, they're playing for mm-hmm. keeps too. And you see with like Khabib. Like, when it comes to like money or disrespecting his family, it doesn't matter to him. He's playing by different rules. Like, you see, like, he shows up to MMA matches and like he's representing God. It's a different energy. They're playing by, it's a different energy. You're playing by different rules, different values. It's so.
Dude, when Connor was fighting Floyd Mayweather, he said all this wild shit. When they were doing those press conferences, the touring around the world and stuff, he was like, fuck the McGregors, or fuck the Mayweathers, fuck the whole family, his children, his parents, fuck them all, blah, blah, blah. And he'd say every nasty thing under the book, and McGregor would smile. And dude, after the fight, they're going to give each other a hug. And it's like, whatever, dude, we were making money together. Like, we know what game we're playing here. We're promoting a fight. We're making big money. Like, we both walked away from this with like over 100 mil each. Like, we're fucking making money. No, you know. Then he went to fight Khabib, his next fight. And he's like, you know, fuck this guy's religion, fuck his family, his country, fuck all of them. And Khabib is like sitting there just steaming. And Khabib doesn't give a shit if he made $1 for that fight or $100 million for that fight. He goes after the fight, after beating the shit out of Conor McGregor, he dives over the cage into a sea of like 7 of McGregor's fucking people. Like, let's rumble. Like, he was leaving like a warrior going to fight in war. I don't care. It's like, oh, dude, you're outnumbered. This is probably not going to go that good for you. Like, whatever. I'm going. As you said, they're playing a different game. And this is not just, it's not a comment on Islam or Judaism. It's a comment on believing in something. And the vast majority of people in America today don't have anything like that. They don't have anything like that in their lives. I mean, they may kind of believe in a few different things, but they'd abandon those beliefs if something else became popular and there was a social price to pay for that. It's, they're just kind of going into these, you know, very shallow beliefs. This is different. It's different when you see those Hasids out there protesting. They believe in what they're doing. And that is a threat. You ever see, you remember in The Godfather 2, when Michael Corleone goes to Cuba, I believe it was, and he sees the guy suicide bomb himself, and they're like talking about, so they're talking about investing in like casinos down there or right. something. I forget the exact storyline, and he decides to pull out because there's like the, you know, it's like the war, but it's like right before the revolution, and he sees the guy suicide bomb himself just to kill like some police chief, and he goes, people who are willing to fight like that, they could win. And like, that's kind of his, where it's like, oh, if you, there is something powerful and very dangerous to the state to have people who believe on that level. And that's pretty interesting to me. So anyway, in this case, go Juice. I'm all with them. If I have to choose between de Blasio and Cuomo or the Jews, I'm rooting for the Jews on this one. So hopefully they avoid it. I wonder if the World Health Organization coming out against lockdowns will, you know, have any influence, because I am, one of the things that I'm very concerned about is another round of lockdowns. I mean, who knows what's going to happen as we go into winter, but we're pretty much here. You know, we're in October. Now we're going into what are, for many states in this country, the cold months. And it seems like, to me, people are going to get sick. I don't know that it'll be COVID or anything, but you're going to see colds and flu season, you know, come around. And I don't know, after everything this country's been through in the last year, how can we like brace a flu season? What if we have a bad flu season? What about these tests that are like overly sensitive? Are they going to, you know, are they going to confuse the common cold with COVID? Is there going to be justifications for more rounds of lockdowns? And so I was pleased and infuriated to see the World Health Organization, you know, acknowledge that lockdowns are not the way to go.
When did they come out with that?
I believe just in the last week.
Oh, I didn't see that. What's what's the big evidence that it doesn't help?
They were basically saying that the impoverishing poor people does more health damage than the mitigation factors of mitigating the COVID. So, you know, now, of course, one of the things that's happened throughout this whole year is that the whole mantra of follow the science only seems to apply to the science that gives the results that they, you know, are looking for. So we'll see if now this science is just ignored, which is quite possible. But we'll see.
But did that was that study, I guess, for a first world country, or was that more their analysis that in a third world country you shouldn't have lockdowns because people are, they don't even have the resources, I guess, to survive during a lockdown? Or
I think they were talking about third world countries as well, right. But they basically came out and reversed and said, we don't support, they said politicians in general should not use lockdowns as their main mitigation technique. So it was something. I mean, it wasn't as forceful as maybe me or you would have liked to see, but it was something. And they weren't just talking about third world countries. All right. Some other stuff is going on. O'Brien has the quote here for us. It says, we in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as the primary means of control of this virus.
Primary is kind of a weak word, to be honest.
Well, yes, that's
not saying
true.
That they're against lockdowns. It just shouldn't be first course
of action. Hold on. And then there's Dr. David Nabarro, who's the World Health Organization's special envoy on COVID-19, said, we really do appeal to all world leaders, stop using lockdowns as your primary control. So again, it's not exactly, it's not exactly the forceful. Here's one more quote. Too many restrictions damage people's livelihoods and provoke resentment. Virus run wild will lead to lots of deaths as well as deliberating long COVID among younger people. All right. So it's not exactly what we'd want, but it's certainly a different, you know, this is the same organization that was praising China's response to the virus, where they, you know, locked people in their homes till they starved to death. So it's something. It's an improvement for sure. Okay, so right now, as we speak, there are confirmation hearings going on in the Senate for Amy Coney Barrett, and it looks like it's going to be, you know, I was watching like a few minutes of it earlier. It's just, oh my God, it's just the worst part of political theater. Just boring speeches by each side, you know, and it's so funny to watch the Democrats, who so transparently believe in nothing but power, complain about the principle of the Republicans, you know, trying to confirm Trump's appointee. I really do just love, there was actually, oh shit, you know what? Actually, there was a Jake Tapper interview. Brian, can you see if you could pull that up? Jake Tapper, just search Jake Tapper constitutional. And it should come up from the other day, because it's really funny to watch the squirming of the Democrats trying to justify their outrage over, my God, the president nominating a Supreme Court justice and the Senate having a hearing about confirming them, which is pretty standard stuff. This happened many, many times throughout the country. But of course, you realize pretty quickly that this is just, it's just that they're very concerned with losing power, and they'll use whatever justification they have to. Okay, cool. All right, let's We'll have this video up in 1 second. But yeah, I thought this was actually a decent moment for Jake Tapper, who I let's just say I'm not a big fan of. He got a nice shout out in my comedy special, Libertas, available for free on my YouTube channel. Go check that out if you haven't already. You'll enjoy it, I hope. Or you won't. Either way, watch it.
Biden yesterday again refused to say where he stands on this question of adding justices to the Supreme Court. I want to play what he said.
It's not constitutional what they're doing. We should be focused on what's happening right now. This court is being packed now by the Republicans after the vote has already begun. I'm going to stay focused on it so we don't take our eyes off the ball here.
I want to get to the idea of adding justices to the court in a second, but he said it's not constitutional what they're doing. How is it not constitutional what they're doing?
His point is that the people have an opportunity to weigh in on this constitutional process through their vote. And we are now in the midst of the election. Millions of people have already cast their votes. And you see that the vast majority of people say that they want the person who wins the election on November 3rd to nominate the justice.
That's a poll. That's not the Constitution.
So there's the constitutional process of advising consent. The American people get to have their say by voting for president, by voting for senators. We are now 23 days from the election.
Right, but it's not unconstitutional.
Millions of votes. Voters are being denied their constitutional right to have a say in this process.
They elected the Senate.
Are trying to ram through. A nominee who, by the way, is going to change the makeup of the court. And we see time and time again, poll after poll shows that most Americans vehemently disagree with this.
Kate, that's a poll.
The vote should happen on November 3rd.
That's not what the word constitutional means. Doesn't mean I like it or I don't like it. It means it's according to the U.S. Constitution. There's nothing unconstitutional about what the U.S. Senate is doing.
They are being denied, the American people are being denied their opportunity to have a say in who gets this lifetime appointment to the court. The intention of the process here is for the American people to have a say in who makes the nomination and okay. Then who ultimately consents to the nomination.
So
what the Republicans are trying to do is ram this through because they don't believe they have the electoral support. That is a problem, and that they are going to try to change the makeup of the court in an effort to do that.
Again, it's not unconstitutional. I get you don't like it, but it's not unconstitutional.
Okay, so the reason I wanted to play that clip is I thought it was interesting on a couple levels. Number one, even Jake Tapper can be pushed to a point where he has to do real journalism, or like even he can be pushed to a point where he's just like, come on, man. Like, you can't say this.
Can I just point out that that's the way almost every one of these interviews should go?
Yeah.
That usually they ask them the question, they give the bullshit answer, which is that canned response where they pivot and just go, well, forget your question. Here's the way I want to frame this. And then you don't get that second follow up where is what mm-hmm. you need, where you go, Yeah, but that's not what constitutional means. And then they say their bullshit answer again, still not what constitutional means, says the bullshit answer again.
Yes.
And then you can finally go, okay, you want to bullshit me. But that you don't showcase the fact that they're lying unless you ask that follow-up question three times. If you just ask the question, let them say their bullshit answer and move on, it sounds like you're agreeing with them or that what they said actually answered your question, which too often the news allows them to do.
Yeah. I completely agree with you there. This is what you have to do every single time is if someone's going to bullshit, you hold their feet to the fire. All right, guys, let's take a quick second. I want to thank our sponsor for today's show, which is YoKratom.com. Go there to get yourself a $60 kilo. That's the world's best value in Kratom shipped right to your door. No questions asked. Now, if you've never heard of Kratom before, just ignore this ad. We're not talking to you. No need to hear this and go try Kratom. But if you're currently a fan of Kratom, then celebrate your freedom at YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo, which is unheard of. YoKratom.com is one of the biggest sellers of Kratom nationwide, and they made YoKratom.com so you can buy directly at wholesale prices. This is quality Kratom. We've heard great feedback from the fans. They confirm it's solid. And like I said, it's the only place where you can get a kilo for $60. So last time, if you're currently a fan of Kratom, go to YoKratom.com and get yourself a $60 kilo. All right, let's get back into the show.
And then also they didn't call out Biden because Biden says two things that are totally not true. He goes, first, he goes, it's not constitutional that they're doing it, which is like you just heard. It's not true. And then also says they're packing the court. In what way? Packing the court means that you're going to increase the amount of justices to that, ensure at least that you're. Yeah.
But they play this game. I mean, that's what packing the court has meant to everybody who uses the term packing the court. They use it to refer to FDR cramming through legislation to allow more seats on the Supreme Court so he can fill it with judges who, you know, are sympathetic to his policies. That's what people mean when they say packing the court. They don't mean when a justice dies and the sitting president nominates a judge and the Senate confirms them. That's never what packing the court has meant. So yeah, it's ridiculous. And just as an aside, I'm actually genuinely surprised by the way the Democrats are, by the way the Biden ticket is handling the messaging about packing the court. Like, even if your plan was to pack the court, I don't see where it's not politically better to say no or to just say we're considering it. Like, okay, the cost to saying no is maybe you don't excite the left wing of your base as much. Maybe you're not threatening, you know, the Republicans to make them, hey, settle down about confirming this lady because you might end up getting the court packed on you. So maybe you want to hold off or whatever. And the political problem with saying we'll think about it is that that might turn off some more moderate voters who don't want the country's government fundamentally changed in that way. Okay. But what about the cost of this, where you just clearly are lying? Like, you're just unwilling to answer a straight up question. I don't think I've ever seen another like major policy, not policy, but this is beyond a policy. This is a major question about restructuring one of the three branches of government, and the campaign won't answer it 3 weeks before an election.
I guess
very strange.
Obama was as flagrant with the "you can keep your doctor," but he just lied about it.
Yes, but no, but that's my point.
Not to evade.
Yes, yeah. No, he just looked right into your eyes and said, "No question about it. I guarantee, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor." That's how a politician handles this. He didn't say, it's not like they went, well, if you like your doctor, will you be able to keep your doctor? And he goes, look, whatever I say on that is going to become the story. So I'm just saying that they're the ones trying to take your doctor away.
And
from
I guess
you.
That's,
you
know, not, like, that doesn't feel as small, or it doesn't feel as permanent as packing the Supreme Court. So I understand why in this case. Yeah.
Well, first off, it wasn't during an election. This was in Obama's first 2 years of his first term. And it's not, look, it's a very important, you know, piece of legislation. It's a very important believe me, if you're an older person or a sick person, your relationship with your doctor is very important to you. But there is something different about restructuring one of the three branches of the government. That seems like something that's been, you know, the same way for, you know, over 100 years. That seems to be very different.
Also, the other piece of this that I just want to showcase as being, you know, bullshit is that you go, well, it's not up to the voters. I don't get to vote for, hey, do I want this Supreme Court justice? That's not the process. So the process is that the voted officials get to make the decision on it. That's the way that, like, in other words, this isn't an isolation. I can't just vote for the Supreme Court person. It's part of your entire ticket and you know what I mean? So it's not really even fair to say, all right, well, we're going to leave this up to the vote. Well, you're not. I don't get to make it. The voters don't get to make a decision on this no matter what. You could decide that I'm voting for, you know, against Trump just because he's orange and a racist, but you could agree with him on who he wants in the Supreme Court, but decide you're voting against him. You know what I mean?
Like, well, that's the way American democracy works. They claim that you have a vote and that this is you getting a say in the government. But it's not as if you get to vote for everything. You get one long menu or another long menu of a lot of shit you might like and a lot of shit you might like absolutely hate. But you got to take it all. Of course, the other main problem, which Jake Tapper does point out, I thought very fairly, is that the other reason why this is just bullshit is because if you're saying, oh, well, the American people didn't get their say, it's like, yeah, they did. They voted for senators and for the president. You don't like the result of it, but it's not as if those elections didn't happen. On top of that, you know, the thing that I actually found most interesting about that clip is that quite often lying politicians or their spokesmen or spokeswoman in this case will tell you who they are if they're pushed a little bit. So quite often they throw like two or three bullshit things out there. But if you let them talk, especially if they're pushed, they will eventually reveal who they are. And we've pointed this out many times on the show before where people, you know, you'd have like some neocon never Trumper and they'd be like, well, I just, you know, he's in bed with the Russians and his blah, blah, blah. And it's this and that. And we hate him for his tweets and this and that. And he's disrupted the bipartisan foreign policy consensus. And you're like, ooh, ooh, there it is. There's the actual reason. It just came out. All that other shit was bullshit. But right there, you just basically said it. He won't commit to all the wars we want in the Middle East. And he won't cheerlead for us. And he even criticizes them. It's like, that's what you don't like about him. It's not all that other stuff. And what she basically says in this interview after push, because the constitutional thing is obviously bullshit. The democracy argument is obviously bullshit. But after she's pushed a little more, but then what does she say? And this is a lifetime appointment that will fundamentally change the court. And it's like, ding, 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 bingo. That's actually your problem here. It's not that you don't, you know, it's not that you actually think this isn't the constitutional process. It clearly is. It's not that you actually care about the democratic say, as you just pointed out, people don't vote for Supreme Court justices. And as I pointed out, they did vote for the Senate and the president. So that argument, but the last argument does actually stand, even though it's not really much of an argument. It's just, this isn't what you like.
No, it's just complaining. Yes. We're losing power.
Yes, that's yeah. It. That's what it all comes down to. We're losing power. If this goes through, we're losing power. I mean, look, obviously, and I said this a few weeks ago on the show, but obviously these are all just hypocritical power brokers on both sides. Does anybody for a second believe that if the Democrats had the presidency and the Senate, that they wouldn't be nominating and confirming a judge right now? Does anyone believe that? Does anyone think for a second that if you said, well, you know, I really think since we have an election coming up that we should let the people get a voice in whether Roe v. Wade gets overturned? Do you think that would like mean anything to anybody on the left, to any Democrat, even just like a liberal Democrat? Would that influence them at all? They'd go like, oh, well, Roe v. Wade might be overturned. Yeah, it's pretty much a toss up, but let's just wait till the election to see. Well, let's make sure the people have a voice. Fucking care about the people having a voice. They want, you know what I mean? Like they want to make sure they have the court. And so of course they would do that. And conversely, if that was the situation where the Democrats, you know, had the presidency and the Senate, and the Republicans would be saying the exact same thing the Democrats are saying right now. They'd go, but people have already started voting. We have to let the will of the people be. The Republicans would all say this because all of this shit is just about power. That's what politics is about. All the other shit is the political theater that's just there to convince you that this isn't just about power. This is really about the good of the country and it's about you and blah, blah, blah. It's all bullshit. All bullshit. And it's surprising to me that people don't see that, but on some gut level, people do know it. And then they just, you know, they rationalize away their bullshit. One of the, I think it was Dick Durbin. Who was it? Some congressman was saying earlier today when I saw him, he was giving one of his speeches. You know, they have like 5 minutes at the beginning of the confirmation hearing to spout off nonsense. And he was like, well, obviously, Donald Trump isn't very confident that he's going to get reelected. Or he would wait till after the election to do this. And it's like, well, I mean, I guess, I don't know. But yeah, it's a close election. Like there's a chance he won't win, but he for sure is president right now. So why would you do,
I guess that shows that he actually cares about the country, because even if he doesn't get elected, he still wants to do well by it. So he'll try and push for the justice he cares about.
There's just as strong an argument of that. I guess
maybe he does actually care about the country. Would you imagine that after all this time?
Well, it's and quite possibly not. I mean, maybe he just cares about his own legacy and his own greatness. I think that's, to be honest, I think that's what motivates Trump. And truthfully speaking, I think that's what motivates a lot of these people. I've always thought that from the very beginning, that you know, one of the things that all of the other ones hate about Trump so much is that he's just a more transparent narcissist than they are. So like people like Obama hate that about him because it's like, no, you're not supposed to expose what a narcissist you are. But meanwhile, he's exactly the same, cares about his own greatness, his own legacy, all these things above anything else. You know, it's funny. I've really, for whatever reason, maybe part of it is just that that Donald Trump has been such a show. You know what I mean? The whole Trump, since he's been campaigning and everything, it's been quite a show, quite a circus. And I'm starting to think now, as you look at this election, it's really close. I don't know. I still say if I had to put money on it, I think Trump gets reelected, but I wouldn't put money on it, you know? But if I had to, that's where I'd go. But it's very close. Like I'd like maybe 52% Trump gets reelected, 48% Biden. And the fact that Joe Biden has been able to basically, you know, stay in his basement for 90% of this campaign really works in his favor. It becomes a complete referendum on Trump. And the fact that the second debate is canceled really works in Joe Biden's favor. And the third debate's up in the air. We don't know that like they might get out of this. And the first debate wasn't the knockout blow that Donald Trump, you know, could have had. I thought he won the night, but it was kind of a shit show and not necessarily, you know. And so you go, you know, there's a chance that this is it. There's a chance that this is the end of the Trump show, which has been quite a show. But I think something that people who really hate Trump, and a lot of our audience does, I mean, I hear from people who listen to us all the time who really, really do not like Donald Trump. And I understand there's a lot to not like about Donald Trump. I don't like him, you know? And not just that he's awful on so many policies. I mean, he's really just,
I hate him for intellectual reasons, and it's mostly just the debt. Like, I just can't get behind someone who's spending in the way that he does, but I love him. You know what it is? Like a girlfriend you got to break up with, but she's a great lay kind of thing. So like, I love everything about how much he pisses off other
people.
Like,
oh shit. I can't be with this crazy bitch anymore. Yeah. But God damn, it's a fun time. Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah. I love that he turns politics into a shit show. It's more entertaining. I love that he gets the left so worked up. And I love that he kind of combats some of the stupidity of to the political correctness. But then if I take a step back, it's like a junk food you're not supposed to be eating. He's as bad on every policy that's important, you know, so you can't really support him. But I still love him.
Yeah, no, listen, I get what you're saying. I get it completely. But I think the thing that maybe people on the left need to focus on, and I do think that the left-wing people who listen to this show are probably more likely to realize this and kind of get what I'm saying here, because they're not just the, you know, dogmatic neoliberal democratic establishment types. They're more, you know, like a little bit more aware of some of this shit. But the democratic establishment narrative is basically that like Trump's this unique evil, and if we can just get rid of him, then we save the soul of the country. You know, that's the Joe Biden narrative. But the truth is, Donald Trump is a result of the American soul being destroyed already. That's the reality of the situation. You know, we basically in the 21st century, in the 20 years so far of it, we got 9/11 a year into the 21st century. And then we went on these crazy wars and just got nothing but L's, you know, destroyed nations, spent trillions of dollars, had thousands of our soldiers killed and tens of thousands more lives ruined. This all with, you know, several other factors, but one of the major factors, because we did lower interest rates as a response to 9/11 and to finance these wars, because they were all deficit financed. So the lowering of interest rates was related to all of this shit. There were other factors also, but this led to the huge housing bubble that then burst in 2008. And our response to the housing bubble and the worst economy, you know, or the worst recession since the Great Depression, was to, you know, push interest rates all the way down to zero and jack government spending through the roof. So the people who got all of the wealth, you know, like in the recovery, were the politically connected, and the Wall Street casino went crazy. And during all of this shit, you know, woke culture really rose, and people in the middle of the country are just being lectured while they feel like they're losing at every turn. And Donald Trump was a big response to that, a big middle finger to the whole establishment. And there's lots more to it, but that's at the core of it. And it's like, you get rid of Donald Trump. Okay. All right, sure. So Trump's gone now. Okay, so Biden comes back in. You know, he makes it a month, and then Kamala Harris is the president or whatever happens after that. It's like, okay, well, what's our response been to the whole COVID dynamic? Oh, interest rates are back down at zero, and government spending's even higher than it ever was before. And what's happening? All of the same shit. All of the same shit that's going to happen every time you do that. You reward the speculators with 0% interest. You know, that's great for the stock market. It's great for Wall Street. And look at the record high government spending. Well, who's been getting it? I mean, okay, there's a crummy few $100 that are going out to, you know, people, but massive corporate bailouts. So you're continuing with all the same shit, and you just get rid of Trump. Guess what that's a recipe for? Another Trump. And it's not going to be Trump. I mean, Trump's a unique fucking guy, to say the least. He's different than every other human being. But I think something people are going to have to realize in this country, and this is for left-wingers too, and some of them do realize this, to be fair, is that that's nothing. You didn't deal with the root of the problem at all. And if you think you're just going to be, listen, no matter what happens in this election, if Donald Trump loses, there's already more than enough evidence for all the Trump supporters that this was never fair. It was never fair. And this is to kind of to your point, Donald Trump has lured a lot of these forces out of hiding. I mean, the deep state is no longer a thing people don't talk about. The bias of the corporate press is not something anyone can deny anymore. Like, nobody can fucking deny this. What was I seeing earlier today? Well, let me just see if I can pull this up literally as we're talking. If I can't find it, I'll just leave it. But it's just funny because I was just, you know, like I'm reading through the news like I do every morning. And I go to like all these fucking, you know, different kind of standard sites because, you know, I just want to see how they're playing things. But so this is CNN, and this is in the analysis section. You know, this isn't like CNN's opinion. This is Stephen Collins just, you know, analyzing the news, right? And it's like, this is the level of news that CNN is doing. Here's the title of the piece. Hold on one second. Trump takes his COVID misinformation machine back on the road. This is the title. President Donald Trump takes his COVID denial tour back to the campaign trail Monday as the tense final stretch of an election now 3 weeks away gets a fresh jolt with Senate hearings on Amy Coney Barrett. Trump, who announced Sunday without providing evidence he has tested totally negative, quote, for his bout with the virus, plans to hold his first rally since his diagnosis was publicly disclosed in Florida in what risks turning into yet another super spreader event.
Yeah,
like this is the coverage
propaganda.
It's just like pure propaganda. So go ahead.
No, I was going to say it'd be really interesting if with Amy Barrett, she appears so likable that leftist women are actually upset with the Democrats for opposing her, where they're like, I don't get it. You got a Christian mom over here that you guys are opposed to. Now, I haven't seen any of the footage of the hearings yet, but that just kind of popped into my head.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's certainly possible. And that would be interesting. And I think the deeper thing here is that you go, even if you get rid of Trump, so what have you got now? You've got a country where all of the fundamental problems that led to a Donald Trump are worse than they were before Trump came in. You've got a media that, to any extent they were, have completely come out as propaganda outlets that are just straight up like, no, we will ruin the populist voice, or at least what these people think is the populist voice representing them. You've got a deep state that's been more exposed. Believe me, more and more of this shit is coming out. Only more is going to come out, even with Trump out of office. It's too hard to control leaks in today's day and age. And so that's where you'll be going. And you'll be having a Joe Biden presidency to preside over all of this. An old, senile, bumbling fool as the front man. So one way or the other, you know, this the populist moment in this country, I don't think is going anywhere. That's going to be interesting to keep our eye on. All right, we got to wrap up there. Exciting few weeks coming up here. This is our time to really have some fun. And I hope you guys, you know, enjoy listening to the show over the next few weeks. Whatever happens one way or the other, it's going to be a fascinating moment for this great nation. All right, go listen to Rob's podcast, Run Your Mouth, follow him on Twitter, at Robbie the Fire. Go check out my hour comedy special, Libertas, available for free right now on YouTube. All right, see you guys later. Peace.